Welcome, listeners, to an all-new sensational spectacular episode of The Process. Today I'm joined with regular host Curtis Weeb, and we're really excited to have the Brandon Graham join us to discuss his career and writing process. For all who don't know, Brandon Graham is currently writing the newly resurrected Extreme Studios turned highly anticipated Image Comics series, Prophet, which starts with issue 21, which actually comes out next week. But what I think he's actually better known for is his creator-owned work with the Eisner-nominated series King City, originally released through Tokyopop and later reprinted by Image Comics, multiple Warheads through Oni Press, and Escalator through Alternative Comics. Unlike most of the guests that we've had on the show who are strictly writers, Brandon is actually not only proving to be the next hot new writer to look out for, but he's also a well-established and mega-talented artist in his own right, so we're actually really excited to be discussing his process from both sides of the track. So, Brandon, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here. I got a chance to listen to a couple episodes this morning. It's very enjoyable.
Oh, great. Thanks. So, I guess I just wanted to get into the first question that we always ask people is, how did you get your first start in comics? And better yet, what was your first professional gig?
My first published stuff was when I was, 19. I did. I would submit a lot to Antarctic Press. They did their kind of manga, American manga stuff, like Ninja High School and Gold Digger and all that stuff. And I submitted them like work probably from, age 15 to age 20 or 19 when they finally accepted me. And they put out a 3-issue series they did called October Yen, which the name stinks of what I was into at the time.
Oh, that's really cool. I was reading some stuff about you, and you have been doing comics for as long as you can remember.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just think it's really interesting because Curtis and I come from a very different perspective where we got into it really late. I'd say like maybe 5-6 years ago. And right. I was just curious, since you've been, you started so young, what compelled you to actually decide to do it all, basically, like the writing and the drawing?
The horrible thing is I don't have too much memory of deciding it. I grew up in a really kind of comic-centric household. Like, both of my parents read comics. My older brother reads comics. And as far back as I remember, my mom likes to tell me that I announced to her when I was like 6 or 7 that I was going to do comic books for a living. Or like I was going to spend my life doing that. And I always like to say it was kind of a bad time to make a lifetime decision, but it's working out. But yeah, they're just always around. My mom had a letter published in Spider-Man when she was in college, and my father's really into underground comics and always tells me the story about trying to go to the Spain Rodriguez's house and knock on his door and him not being there. So it's very very much around all the time.
Were your parents really insistent that you read comics, or was it just a matter of that they were always laying around and you just got interested that way?
Yeah, I think they were just always around. I don't think it occurred to anyone else that I would... I wasn't pushed to do a living off them or anything. My family was always a little shocked when I was so uninterested in school. And I was like, no, it's cool. I'll do comics.
And I've read that your brother was a pretty big influence as far as style and the content that you were reading. Did you have anybody in school or any teachers or any classes that kind of helped progress your work?
I had a weird relationship with school. I was I always thought of education as the thing that was getting in the way of me doing comics. Okay. I was getting in trouble for drawing a lot, and I was always getting comic books confiscated when I brought them to school. But and it's weird now because my wife who does comics as well, she comes from a completely opposite background where she she's the only member of her family that isn't a doctor, and they're all very school centric. And it's amazing to me to see that working out for someone,
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I myself went to an art school and, it didn't really pan out the way I thought it was going to. I'm just impressed with people that know what they wanted to do, and just kept working at it. I feel like I spent most of my life trying to figure that out. So, but I am a huge fan. The first thing I ever read of yours was King City, which I just thought was really awesome.
Oh, thank you.
And how did that come about? I mean, was that something that you were just working on and then you started submitting, or did you just pitch an idea to somebody?
the impetus for or what kind of, I think it grew out of just complete frustration of submitting a lot of things and not getting them published.
Yeah.
Like I said, I had a book that came out when I was 19, and then I had a thing come out when I was like 24 through another company, and I was just always kind of having these books trickle out from whatever publishers I could convince. And then I did porn comics for a while in New York because it was like a way that I could make money doing comic books.
Nice.
And that's lots of stories about that. But I was going into I managed to kind of get my way into one of the Vertigo editor's offices, and I was going up there like every week, every time I could go up there and pitch something. Like I actually filled a collection of short stories with things that I pitched there that didn't get accepted and published it later. But I reached a point where the editor I knew had moved on, and the porn publisher that I was submitting stuff for, they were like, yeah, we don't want your stuff right now. It's not selling that good. And I just kind of reached this impasse where I just had nowhere. I felt like everything I'd kind of been working for had kind of stalled, and I didn't really have any place to even pitch my stuff to. And I was very frustrated with kind of being in New York and the New York comic scene at the time. And I just decided to do a comic book just completely for myself. And I was working at a bookstore, a Strand bookstore at the time, just like unloading trucks. And I remember I would sneak away from work all the time and just like work on the pages. So the first 40 pages of it were just me drawing it on my lunch break. And I was amazed at how much they let me get away with, or not they let me, they didn't notice me kind of going away for lunch for 3 hours and then coming back and writing the wrong time on the timesheet. And, you know, just so I could just have another hour of working on the page. So I was listening to one of the interviews you did this morning, and the guy was talking about how it was so much easier to have when you have nothing but comics to work on. And in a weird way, it was, I always think about that as a really exciting time for me, because it was really easy. The enthusiasm was there. It was like every free moment was me wanting to do comics. And it's like now it's like I'm still enthusiastic about comics and like doing them, but I think back to that because, you know, any day where I'm just like sitting around and watching television, I'm just like, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that version of me from a couple years ago would slit my throat if he saw this. But
I can definitely identify with that. I mean, you know, I've been pushing this for 5 or 6 years myself, and it's like now I'm doing it full time. And it's like, yeah, there's days where you sit there and you waste 2 or 3 hours doing nothing. And you're like, you know, I live for these moments 5 years ago where I could be writing for those 2 hours. You know, that's my job now. And it's like, yeah, it's easy to maybe just take it for granted, I think, once you establish yourself a little bit. But yeah, I can definitely identify with you there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think those moments are also really important too, because I mean, you don't want to burn out.
No, exactly.
It's always a danger, I think. Like, you see people kind of push. A friend of mine was talking about how he sees a lot of people in comics kind of last. I forget what the window was. It was like 6 years or something, because, you know, especially kind of working for Marvel and DC. Just a lot of people, I think they kind of burn out, or they go to industries that pay more.
Well, do you have any interest ever working for the big two?
Oh, no. I mean, I have a little bit, but yeah. I found it really frustrating.
Yeah.
I was supposed to do a Marvel... I was supposed to do Ghostwriter years ago and actually drew issues of it. And I always joke about how they accepted it and they were going to do it. This guy, John G, was going to be the writer on it, and I was going to draw it. And after a while, they just stopped talking to us. And then we read online that the line was canceled.
Oh, my God.
So I always joke that, like, you know, at some point I'm going to get a call from an editor that's like, you're 10 years late on this book.
So what do you think of your personal opinions on creator-owned comics and, you know, the big two? I mean, do you obviously find a more enjoyment out of just having complete control over what you're working on, or?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I always come off really sour about the big two because, you know, I'm always telling my friends, you know, why would you want to work for those assholes? and part of it is just because my experience with them was so, like, I love those comics. There's so much good stuff coming out of there, you know, even now. And it's certainly the stuff I grew up on. But just kind of the frustration of dealing with that and kind of seeing the behind the scenes of how creators are treated and just how they run themselves as companies and kind of their motivations, I find really frustrating.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, yeah, it's like, it's the worst thing when you, like, I mean, it's basically like watching your heroes get fucked over, you know? It's like, I mean, if you look at, like, you know, Jack Kirby or Alan Moore or any of those guys, and you love those guys and you love their work, and then you see, like, the bad guys that are, like, trying to screw them over and trying to take their characters and do the wrong things with them, you know, it's like, I don't want to work with those guys.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but it does break my heart, because it would be fun to draw Spider-Man, you know?
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, it's always, I mean, from a writer's standpoint, do you consider yourself, I mean, because it's very interesting that you draw and write your stuff, because for Curtis and I, obviously, we focus primarily on the writing. I mean,
right.
As far as your work process, what is like a typical day for you?
It changes up a lot. Especially now with the profit stuff, I kind of have different days. I do different things. I can tell you today I brought out these giant sheets of paper. They're probably like, 3 foot by 2 foot piece of paper. And I'm just doing like Sharpie layouts all over the thing to try to figure out the last 10 pages of this Oni comic I'm working on.
Okay.
And, you know, while I'm doing that, I get emails from Simon, who's working on the third issue or the 23rd issue of Profit. And so it's kind of me running back and forth from the computer to the floor and sketching out different ideas. But it's always like that. It's like it's nice to have a couple different projects to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And while this is going on, the King City stuff is going on as well. But I have a setup now in my apartment where my desk is as far from the room as my computer as I could possibly put it. And my wife always jokes that she can tell what mood I'm in by where my chair is. It's like if I'm sitting at the computer, I'm going to be pissed off, and I'm sitting at the desk, I'm going to be happy.
So do you find you like that break of like physically drawing and then sitting at a computer screen writing? Do you like that switch, or is it?
Yeah, it's. I mean,
yeah.
I write a lot on paper still. Like I have.
Oh, cool.
Like when I do Profit, I have a sketchbook that's just like the Profit sketchbook that I doodle in. And it's so much like I don't know how to write without drawing.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. That's interesting.
So it's
yeah. So you do like thumbnails instead of like you obviously still write the script, but do you thumbnail it kind of beforehand and then go back and write the script?
There's not really a script until it's done. It's like
really?
There's a lot of talking. Well, I send Simon who's drawing it the we talk it over a lot. I actually was telling him that we're going to change the credit so it's written by me and him because he's so involved in every aspect of that. Like we talk it all through and talk about what would be exciting and then I just make kind of a bullet point list and send that to him like what could go on every page, and then either him or me, one of us does thumbnails and sends it to the other one. We've kind of done it back and forth with the last four issues, and then. We back and forth those a lot more too. Like I'll come up with different ideas for layouts, or he will, and then pencils the thing, shows that to me, and then inks it. And when it's inked, I go in and do all the dialogue and all the narration afterwards. And some of it has to be tighter, of course. Like if there's actually a conversation, like that obviously has to be planned, or that would be insane.
But, so for the most part, though, the dialogue is actually written after the comic is pretty much fully illustrated.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't really a lot of dialogue in Profit because there's not many humans in it, so it's
right.
A lot of him dealing with, you know, weird aliens that don't speak English or, So there's not a lot of talking heads because I mean we're trying to fit these like self-contained kind of Conan stories in these 20-page issues.
Oh, okay. So is there an overarching plot that you're working with, or is it mainly self-contained?
It's a big overarching plot for the whole thing. But then I'm trying to make all the issues self-contained, kind of within that. And we've got a cool thing where I'm working with three different artists on it, and they're all doing different characters' perspectives. I find it frustrating when when you're reading a mainstream book and they switch artists,
yeah,
like in the middle of a story. And all of a sudden you're like, that guy doesn't look like that. So to kind of avoid that, we want to have, you know, you'll never see like the same characters don't get drawn by the same artists, different characters in the same universe. And so it's nice. Almost like their perspective. I think I'm really interested in seeing how that works, and I'm gonna do one of those story arcs myself.
Sweet.
That's really cool.
Brandon, I just saw Image just posted that your profit sold out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you probably already got that news, but it's been publicly announced, so congrats.
Well, thank you. It's really bizarre because, you know, no one's read it yet.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. It seems like Image, with certain titles, like, that's been happening, and people are kind of attributing it to, oh, well, they're intentionally, you know, sell, or they're printing less so they can announce these sellouts. But the problem is that, you know, they're only printing maybe 1,000 more than are ordered. And then, like, the month before, all this hoopla comes around the books, and then everybody tries to up their order, but the print run's already been established, and, you know, that's why it keeps happening.
I think they print pretty high, usually.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they try to, but it's all based on the orders. They're not intentionally doing it. There's this weird sentiment out there that they're doing it intentionally to announce these sellouts. It's very bizarre. Like, it's actually way more hurtful not to have a comic in stores.
Exactly, it hurts
you. Know? So, yeah. Anyway. Congrats, anyway. There you go.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's so surreal. This whole profit thing is just... It's funny how incredibly nonchalantly I kind of took it on, and how it's really strange. I feel like I'm kind of seeing another side of comics now, and I'm like, oh, that's how that works.
Well, so with your, like, being asked, because I saw Eric Stevenson, you guys had a conversation about the project. Did you know when you were talking to Eric at the time that they were planning on relaunching this whole line, or was this before all that was even talked about?
Oh, I knew about the relaunch for a while because Joe Keating, who's writing Glory, was brought on earlier, and he's a good friend of mine.
Okay.
And so he was talking about that a lot, and I think they were, because at some point... Because they were throwing out a bunch of ideas, and it was kind of fun to treat it like, you know, like fantasy football or something, and just talk about, like, oh, wouldn't it be crazy if this guy did this? And I was just thinking of, like, different indie guys that would probably have no interest in it, and what it would be like if they took on those things.
Yeah, nice. I think it's. I'm interested to know how you feel about tackling, you know, something that's. A licensed property already that's already been around. Was that something you say nonchalantly that you took it on, but was it something you really were interested in eventually, or is it just something like, hey, this is actually kind of cool, like, I didn't really think I'd ever do this, or have you always had the idea?
I've kind of dabbled in it in the past.
Yeah.
I've done, like, other people's characters and short stories and other people's universes, but nothing quite like this, and it's really surreal because, I mean, my whole idea of Image has had to change really dramatically in the past couple of years, because I had that really 1990s idea of Image, and I was coming from, you know, black and white indie comics and just thinking of them as the devil. It's like, kind of seeing how they operate and seeing how they treat their creators has really kind of won me over, and just like how much, you know, Eric Stevenson specifically has, like, gone out of his way for me. Like, King City would be, you know, a floppy little Tokyopop manga book that no one had ever read if he didn't kind of stick his neck out for it. And just seeing that and realizing, like, you know, at first I was like, what the hell does this guy have to gain from this? And, you know, in the end, it's like, you know, nothing financial, but, you know, it helps, you know, get comics that he believes in out, which is, you know, like, those are the guys that I want to hang out with. And so a lot of the kind of me wanting to be involved in this was kind of wanting to stay at Image while I did another book for Oni.
Okay.
So that book with Oni, is that you're doing both writing and illustrating for that one?
Yeah, it's a thing called Multiple Warheads. It's like a...
Oh, okay, right. Thing.
Yeah, but I think I didn't answer your question at all. I think back to, like, my... I didn't think about profit in the past. It was just kind of not on my radar. And so to kind of get all the issues and sit down and read them and be like, it was like my first real reading of it was me being like, what can I do with this? Which is kind of cool. Like, I think it would be harder if I already had an idea of the character established.
Sure.
But, and it kind of, what were you saying?
Yeah, so you were given a lot of freedom then with kind of maybe reimagining the character a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, complete, total, absolute freedom, pretty much.
Wow, that's,
like,
awesome.
An insane amount of freedom. Like, I've actually, ask them things that I was like, can I get away with this? And, you know, nobody cares. It's, you know, or they just have some faith in seeing where it can go.
And are you working, like, when you're going in for, like, feedback, you know, when you want to make a change or something like that, is that with Eric, or is Liefeld actually involved with this in any way, or is just his name attached to it for the most part?
It's pretty much just his name, yeah, just Eric. My only dealing with Liefeld so far is he sent a supportive email after he read the issue.
Oh, no, nice.
The whole thing's really surreal. Like, I don't think of him, it's hard to think of him as a real person still, you know? It's Liefeld.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. Right on.
That's kind of been my last couple of years in comics books. I don't know why, I just have a hard time kind of wrapping my brain around a lot of people who you think of their work and you just can't imagine. Like, I can't think of like Mobius going and getting groceries. It's hard to wrap your brain around. And then to see, I remember the first time I ever met Paul Pope, just kind of randomly in the DC office. I completely geeked out on him, and the first thing I said to him was like, "Oh, you're not supposed to be real." Like, you know, that's the way to win him over.
Yeah, yeah,
that's hilarious.
So to kind of wrap up on your whole work process, I was curious to know how do you balance, since you do this full time, how do you balance your work with the rest of your life?
God, I don't know. I don't know if I have.
Talk to some creators about this, and some of them do have a very specific divide in their time and their time management. And right. We spoke to Joe Casey, and he's like, no, it's all one big blur. So,
yeah, curious. I mean, that's my pretty much my life is. I sometimes talk about like comic books is like me watching television. Like if I'm bored and want to be entertained, I'll work on comics, and I've got this. Circle of friends around me where it's like it gets weird. Everyone does comics, so it's weird for me to hang out with people that don't do comics. You know, like James Stokoe does Orc Stain is right down the street, and his wife does comics as well, and then my wife Marion, Ed Brisson.
Yeah, is Vancouver a big comic book scene?
It's not a big comic book scene, but I think it's a cool one. It's like a small kind of tight knit one with a bunch of different creators here. And I kind of moved right in the center of, I live right across the street from a really good comic store, and there's a comic book jam that happens right next to that. And like, it's just very, my lifestyle has gotten so comic book. It's ridiculous. But yeah, so it's really, there's no way to differentiate it. And it's funny because I have a lot of friends that do comic books that don't read a lot of comic books, and they're always like, man, when can we talk about something else? Never.
Never. You must leave now.
Yeah. You're kicked out of the coven.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Curtis.
I was going to ask him a bit about King City. Do you mind if we move on to that topic there, Jeremy?
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
So I guess one of the things I want to know is, how did the series come about with Tokyo Pop? And we know that they're now defunct. This is obviously before that time. What was the series of events that led to that connection?
Oh yeah, I kind of trailed off that story, so I'd done about 40 pages, and I was just kind of doing it for myself. And I was part of this comic book group in New York called Meat House, which was just mostly art school students at the School of Visual Arts putting out an anthology. And through that, I met a bunch of artists, and one of them was Becky Cloonan, who's, what is she doing, Conan now, I think she just started?
Yep.
Yeah, and a bunch of Brian Wood books. But, so she was doing a book with Tokyo Pop, a pirate book. What's that one called? It's called, my brain is not working today. But anyway, so she did...
Northlanders?
No, not North. It was her Tokyo Pop book.
Tokyo Pop. Oh, yeah, okay. I'm gonna remember the title of it.
It's probably 10 feet from me right now. But anyway, so she was doing that, and she suggested, I remember, I think she was like, you need to quit doing porn comics. You should talk to Tokyo Pop. And I remember at the time I'm really bad at pitches is my theory, because I had so many pitches rejected that time. And like, you know, like I said, going up to Vertigo every week and going to every comic publisher that I could get to and just showing them all of my ideas. Yeah, I had a friend of mine at one point just be like, stop telling people what your books are about. They'll never pick them up. You just show them to them. So that's kind of the way that I pitch books now, is I just draw the things and then hand in like 20 pages.
You have that advantage as an artist.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice advantage as an artist. And so that's kind of what I did. So when Tokyopop asked to see pages, I just a little bit to be facetious and just so I'd like to kind of see how much I could impress them. I remember I sent them, I think, 300 pages of just stuff I'd done, just this giant, just I sent them a crate of comics, you know? And they picked it up, and it was a completely thrilling experience, the idea of knowing that I could do comic books for a living at that point.
How many issues was it through Tokyopop?
Originally, they signed on for three books, three 200-page books.
Wow.
And it eventually only turned into about 400 pages. But still, I mean, before that, I'd only done three-issue series. I did a couple three-issue series through really small publishers, and that was the longest thing I'd ever done. So it was like I was just kind of screwing around with this comic, really personally just for myself to be entertained. I remember at the time I was really anti-plot. Like I didn't, because I think the pitching process soured me in such a way where I was just like, I hate this part of it. I hate this part of it. I'm just doing this for myself and I'm not going to plan it out. And there's going to be no, you know, I'm just going to draw kind of scene to scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to take that idea and talk to an editor about it and kind of hammer out into where the story would go. And it was really interesting. And I think really good for me to kind of have that kind of combative conversations back and forth with editors about, you know, we want this character to do this. And it was funny because a lot of it was getting really autobiographical in King City. And I remember the editor would really comment on the characters and in kind of abusive way. Like he'd be like, I remember one time talking about Joe being this huge loser. He's like, what's he going to do with his life? This guy's such a loser. And I was like, I'm writing it like it's me.
And would you say that where were you living at the time when you were doing King City? Because I love your stuff, and it does feel like that you're very, especially in Escalator, you do draw from personal experiences. And there was this one short you did in Escalator about living in New York and living, I think you were in Washington Heights or somewhere, and you were just talking about traveling around the city and how it's like, you described it perfectly. And I was just curious with King City, what were the major influences?
I started it when I was in New York, and then moved back to when I got the Tokyopop deal, I moved back to Seattle, and then a couple years after that, I moved up to Vancouver in Canada, where I'm at now.
Oh, gotcha.
And so yeah, it took three cities to get that thing done.
Wow.
But a lot of ways they're very similar.
Okay. You know, it's
always me in some apartment with a desk, you know.
Yeah. And then you mentioned that Stevenson reached out to you as far as bringing it back through Image.
Yeah, well, there's a really there's a drawn out story of that too. There's so the book got canceled from Tokyopop. They decided to stop doing all of their American manga books at a certain point, and they did this when I was like, I don't know, half done with the second book. It was just like, at this really like pivotal point, they just called me up and they're like, oh, we're just going to release this as a webcomic now.
Wow.
And, you know, I freaked out because it was like kind of all my eggs were in that one basket. And I contacted everyone I could think of in comics and Joe Keating, who's writing Glory, was working at Image as the marketing guy at that point. And I just met him at like a pizza place a couple months before that, just through friends of mine. And he immediately contacted Stevenson and had him contact me. And he was very nonchalantly like, yeah, let's publish this. And the problem with other publishers is that the rights were all tied up in Tokyopop. But Image, you know, didn't really care. They're like, we don't want the rights anyway. We don't touch the rights in any of our books. So let's do that. And it was interesting because Tokyopop had all their American manga creators really mad at them. So they weren't talking to anyone. So I couldn't get them on the phone at the time. So I remember at a certain point, I just started posting the pages online. And it pissed them off enough that they contacted me, and they basically called me up to yell at me, and I was like, wait, guys, Image wants to talk to you.
Wow. So and is that the reason why? Because I know that the single issues, it was like 12 issues, right, through Image.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because I've been waiting for the trade because I want them all collected in one book, and is that the reason why it's been delayed? Is because of those that tie up?
Yeah, it's been a ridiculous amount of negotiation. It's like, I think it took 9 months to negotiate the issues, and then probably about the same amount of time to negotiate the trade.
Wow.
And at the time, when the issues came out, I was like, okay, this is it. This book is kind of, I always regarded King City as kind of the baby I had to sacrifice to get known in comics.
Yeah.
And so I didn't think the trade would ever happen. So it's kind of amazing that it did.
That's very exciting. So I guess, you know, this show is obviously talking about the writing process of comic books. And, you know, you are primarily, I look at you as an artist, honestly. And I don't feel like your books are heavy on, you know, dialogue or heavy on, you know, plot twists and all that. So I was just curious, since you described a little bit about how you're writing Prophet, is King City written in a similar way where it's just mostly drawn?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of have to switch up how I work for different types of things. And just to kind of, I'm always inventing new processes to work, you know. I was thinking about how it's not really for me about kind of how it's done. It's kind of just getting myself to this like cocky point where I feel like I can do anything with the work. And it's like once it feels like having an old rusty push mower and trying to get it to move and it won't budge at all. And then once you kind of get it moving and the momentum of the thing will kind of carry the thing, and then it's almost pulling you along. Mm-hmm. And it's really like me just trying different ways. I have a friend who always talks about how when you're young, doing art is really easy because you just have so much enthusiasm and you're just kind of powered off of all of that. And at different points in your life, how you kind of have to find different fuel almost to run your art enthusiasm off of. And so I'm always trying to find different fuel. Maybe that was an incredibly abstract way to answer your question.
No. I mean, you know, I know that I know I am a process junkie, and I'm sure Curtis is too. You know, we talk about just, you know, I went through a lot of different ways of how to write. You know, the first thing I ever wrote was look more like a screenplay because I didn't actually do the research, and I actually was able to get a meeting with an editor at Vertigo as well, and she read it, tore it apart, and, you know, it was me doing a lot of research and seeing, you know, because comic book scripts, there is no format. Like, everybody writes it differently, and there's no standard. So were there things that you researched on your own about how to, you know, work on a comic as far as the art and writing it?
I think it was just all trying to study kind of the back end of just seeing everything that I could see from reading other people's comics. And I remember when I was first getting into it, it was the information on that was a lot harder to track down.
Yeah.
So it was basically if somebody did an autobiographical joke comic in the back of one of their books, then that would be where I got all my information from. Like Ninja High School or there's a Dirty Pair comic where Adam Warren talks about his process, and I like have that thing memorized. And it was just done as a joke, obviously, and I'm just like, oh, this is how he does it, you know. What kind of pencil does he draw himself using? And I remember figuring out that I had all these revelations where I wouldn't know that I didn't know comic books were inked at a certain point. And this is like when I'm, you know, 11 or something. And I realized they were inked, and I was so frustrated, and I was like, no, I can't learn to ink. I've gone too far, I can't go back. and learned a letter where I would take comic books and be like, okay, these are drawn about twice this size, so I would rule out the size of the lettering and double it and use that to letter. Wow. And so it was really just completely trying to arrive at things my own way and not kind of knowing how they are done. And I think that's probably good in a certain way because you develop your own systems for everything. I noticed something recently about my writing where I realized that if I'm not reading, I have a really hard time writing. And it has to be actual books. Like I have to be, you know, I have to have some Raymond Chandler book around me to write anything, or just the kind of input of kind of reminding myself how good the work can be. It's like I have to read good stuff and be like, oh, this is what I'm aspiring to.
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think anybody when they're working, especially with, you know, you and Curtis who are doing it all day, every day, I mean, yeah, you have to find that stuff that kickstarts your headspace and so you can create. Do you fall into those blocks every once in a while, or and if you do, is there something you go to that helps?
I have days I can't draw very well, and those are frustrating. But yeah, what I do fan art usually to kind of get myself out of those things. Because I feel like that's kind of the way I first learned to draw, as I was redrawing things out of other people's comic books. And so I do that a lot. Like my sketchbook, a lot of it is just me redrawing panels from other people's work and redrawing photos and things. And just kind of, you know, maintaining that enthusiasm. I always say that my job is not to draw comic books as much as it is to stay enthusiastic about drawing comic books. Because as soon as you're enthusiastic about it, then, you know, there's no problems there.
Yeah.
Do you find, like, you work with some of your friends like James Tocoe, do you find that your guys' work influences each other? Like if you guys sit around and chat about your projects, or if you draw, you know, together at a drawing jam, do you find that that influences what you're working on?
Yeah, I think hugely. Kind of everyone around me is always influencing my stuff. And James is really difficult because his process is so alien to me. Like I've known the guy since, I think he's 26 now, and since he was 19. And, I've never seen, he doesn't do layouts. It's the weirdest thing in the world to me. I found a script by his the other, and it's like we lived together for years. We lived together in Seattle, and I would never, like I found a script page. It was like he did a page of notes the other day, and I had to run around his apartment to be able to read it, and he was like trying to get back. He's like, you're not supposed to see that. But yeah, and there's tons of in jokes in the work, and I think that's another thing to kind of have it go forward is like he has characters in his Orcstain thing where he'll just draw like the guy drawing the spirit Mortat, or I guess he's on All-Star Western now. I used to work as his assistant when I was in my early 20s, but like he's a character in Orcstain, and James just drew him to kind of mess with him. So he drew him as like an old man with gray temples and, you know, it's really abusive. And so there's a lot of that stuff. It's kind of, I really need to be around other artists. It helps me a lot to kind of see what people are doing and get really enthusiastic about their work and be like, I want to keep up. I want to do something that level of good.
Yeah.
Cool.
I noticed that, you know, with your style and James' style, it's the stuff, like all the little inside jokes, all the just little details that you guys add to your pages. I can't imagine there's like, you know, I couldn't imagine writing that script because there's just so much involved on every page that it would look like just insane. And so you would say that mostly you depend on your drawing when you're doing these jokes. Are they things that you're thinking of consciously while you're doing it, or it just pops up in your head while you're actually doing the work?
There's a mix, because sometimes it's like when I'm working on Profit without the jokes, it seems really easy in a different way. It's like, because the puns are really, that's the hard part for me. I do a lot of puns in my stuff, and at the same time, it takes a lot of work to get it going, but then while I'm actually drawing the page, sometimes the jokes that'll work best will be just the things that I fart out that aren't important at all. And, you know, it's like comedy is so, like planning comedy is so hard, I think.
Yeah, it's all timing. Yeah.
I think it'd be really difficult to write a script and then convey it to the artist and have them exactly on the same page with you with something like that, where it's like if you're trying to convey, you know, sadness or you know, some action scene, then it's almost a different animal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of scary to think about how to do that through a script, because it has to be so, you know, it's just me giggling, like me drawing the word fart on a billboard and like giggling while I'm drawing it, and hopefully that's like getting conveyed over to the reader that it's amusing.
Who do you have in your life that you go to for kind of the instant feedback if you've written the script or if you've illustrated something that you think is really funny? Do you have a soundboard where you're like, is this funny? And, you know, to try to get a response, or do you just go with it?
Oh yeah, no, I'm really obnoxious with everyone around me and show them everything. My poor Marianne, my missus, has to look at everything I've done like, you know, 4 or 5 times a day. and then past her, I've got a bunch of friends who, when I need really harsh criticism, a bunch of the guys who did backups in King City, like Tom Herpick, who works on Adventure Time cartoon, and my friend Ledro, who's a graffiti writer in Tokyo, I send them stuff. But that's like when I want it ripped apart.
Because they don't hold back, I guess, eh?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's really important to have people that kind of know that know what you're capable of and kind of expect better, you know? There's a story I wrote about in the back of one of the King Cities where I was drawing a page and drew one of the characters, Pete, crouched down, and my friend Ledro just put a line of ink through the thing and was just like, draw it better. And I was going to publish it the way it was, and I was like, you know, you motherfucker, how dare you? And then I drew it better, and now I'm glad that I did. But while I'm working a lot, especially with friends like that and with my older brothers, really that way too. And so I always have that kind of in the back of my head where I just don't – it's like if I'm drawing something and it's not right, there's a little bit of forgiving yourself, but then at the same time there's the idea that, you know, this shit won't fly if my friends see it.
Right.
Which I think is really important. And sometimes I see artists and to joke about people's stuff, I'll be like, man, this guy doesn't have friends. Nobody's telling him that. Like, he doesn't have any – it's like the emperor's new clothes.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's something that, you know, I've had a few, my girlfriend's a good sounding board for me too, where I'll show her a script, or even the artists that I work with, like Riley Rossmo from Green Wake, I would always write the first 3 pages. And before I ever went any further than that, I would send him that and be like, is this the right tone? Do you think this is going to work? And I wouldn't actually progress any further until I heard back from him. And that's just been, I think that's just good to keep yourself in check, to have your creative, you know, your creative partners as well as people in your life to just be like, you know what, I don't care if you're honest with me, just level with me. I'm only going to learn that way. So I'm lucky that way for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really, it's frustrating too, because when you have that, sometimes you're just like, just tell me this is good. People will just be like, oh God, really?
Yeah, I just want to get this done this week.
Yeah, exactly.
It is important to surround yourself with people that, you know, can be supportive and critical, but also you can always depend on, and whether they create themselves, like, you know, I'm Curtis and I are friends, and I think I really love everything he does. I, you know, some of his comics that, you know, I think they're pretty good. Not all of them, but I mean, with that said, you know, I do respect his work, and it's good to have people like that. And I think for people who are doing comics themselves, which I think, Brandon, you're one of the most impressive ones in my mind, because you just did it. And, you know,
Thank you. The first thing
I tell everyone is that there is rejection. There's going to be a lot of rejection. And if as long as you can be okay with that, as long as you know you're going to fail and you can keep failing until you get good, then, you know, this is what you should be doing.
Yeah.
Brandon, basically what I wanted to ask you is that with do-it-yourself comics, like as far as people out there starting on their own, what advice would you give them?
I think it is really important to kind of get to a place where you're completely doing it for yourself. And like you're talking about with rejection, it's like there's kind of a way of, you know, figuring out what's important to you and what kind of your own value system in comics is, because, you know, it's like editors are not going to necessarily make the books that you want to read, and they're not necessarily going to give you the good advice for your own work. It's like you just have to have your own gauge and make work completely for yourself, and kind of, you know, that's the helpful thing about having a community, is you make work for yourself and for your friends, and kind of the money side of it and the business side of it is like not important to the actual work. And so it's like by the time that actually, if and when that shows up, it's like then you can kind of slough that off and it doesn't affect the work, because you've already got, you know, a good idea of the work going. Mm-hmm. And it's been really important to me to really separate the community and the art form of comic books from the business side of comic books, because I don't think the business side is always the healthiest, you know, because people are running stores and they're running companies off of this thing, so it's not necessarily based on self-expression, you know.
Oh,
and to continue my rambling.
what are some things that you've been at this for quite a while now. What are some things that, like, some pitfalls that you've had, some stumbling blocks that have slowed down your progress? Can you look back and see any of those and maybe say, like, watch out for this?
Yeah, I mean, but those, I think it's good to have run into that thing too. I mean, the main thing for me is kind of losing respect in a lot of the different aspects of how I assumed the system worked originally. And seeing that a lot of it isn't based on the quality of the work.
Right.
And it's kind of maddening, you know. It's maddening to see, you know, if you're a creator and you're working and you're trying to break in and you go to the comic book store and you see everything on the shelves, you know. And I'm sure you guys have had that experience where you're just like, why are these books allowed here? I can't get, you know, I can do this job so much better. And kind of I find the nepotism aspect of it a little frustrating. And I understand it. Like, everybody wants their friends in it and everything, but the kind of quality suffers a little bit because of it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with you on that. I mean, I don't know if you saw over the weekend, I announced that my series Green Wake got canceled. And that's kind of a reality, you know, like we have a lot of people that are like, what? Like, how can this be? We love the series. And it's like, well, it doesn't sell. You know, that's just the reality. Sometimes you just, you know, no matter what people say about it, it's not going to sell. And sometimes the things that, you know, people like critically just do not like or are just kind of hated, those books just seem to like, continue to do really well. So I think you have to prepare yourself for that. I definitely wasn't prepared for that. I thought, oh, I got some really good reviews on my book, it's going to do well, but it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and the part of Image that I think that a lot of people don't talk about is that, and Image is very upfront about this, but people assume that if you're doing an Image book, then you're going to be living off of it and making good money. But, you know, it's like they fund the book, but you don't necessarily make any money until until it makes money off the back end. And like, you know, Stoko on Orkstein, I think just recently, like after doing 6 issues, did he see a single check from it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's 4 or 5 months before you see the money. And then even then you just don't know. You don't know what you're going to get until you're basically working for free for the first 6 months.
Yeah, totally. And I imagine that system kind of works a lot better if a writer can kind of almost keep a day job and then run his Image book on the side.
Yeah.
And help out the artist too. But, I mean, I'm interested if Kirkman has started his line yet, his thing, he's actually funding it and doing books out of that. What's that one called?
Skybound?
Yeah. Has that started putting out books yet?
Yeah.
Which Doctor which is doctor? Out?
Oh, yeah. I know the writer of that.
I think Invincible moved over to Skybound, and they have a new one called Thief of Thieves that's coming out this year with Nick Spencer and Kirkman.
Okay, because that seems like kind of a different side of Image. I mean, maybe the Shadowline stuff pays too, but anyway, this is the boring part of the conversation.
Nope. Well, I can tell you, as Green Wake and Shadowline, they don't pay you up front. It's all on the back end, so same thing.
Oh, man, that's rough.
Yeah,
that's how it goes. But
I mean, that's just how it with creator on comics. I think that you know, you just have to do it because you want to. And from a writer standpoint, linking up with artists, it's always challenging because there's a lot of artists out there that, you know, want to do art, but they don't necessarily know what it takes to make a comic book, and they obviously want to get paid. So it's this weird, you know, understanding. You know, I fortunately have linked up with a few artists that, you know, want to make a comic book, and they know, hey, look, if there's no money up front, it's fine. But you know, share the IP and I'll be happy.
Yeah.
So it's different. I mean, it's a lot of things that I didn't even know getting into comics. I didn't know how any of that worked until I started meeting people who have books out. But
yeah. And there's that crazy sweet spot you have to get if you're like a writer working with an artist, where you have to essentially get someone who's good at storytelling, but who wants the help of a writer. So it's like they have to
Yeah, it's because I've been working with a couple different artists, and one I invited him in, and I said, look, we're going to co-create this. I've written it, you know, I've plotted it all out, but you know, you can certainly put your input in and change things if you want. And you know, his revisions have been amazing. And then I worked with another artist who she doesn't even want to look at, like, tackle the script. Like, she'll read it and draw it, but she's like, you know, that's your whole domain, and I'll do what you write and stuff. So it's a very organic relationship, which is interesting.
That seems like the way to do it. It's interesting on Prophet, because every artist that I'm working with, you know, Farrell Darrenpool and Yanni did Old City Blues, they all write as well. So it's really,
awesome.
It's almost like multiple brains working on the same idea. So it's like collaborative writing, which helps a lot. Cause I've been on the artist side, and I always found it little, you know, it's weird when you write to just be like somebody's, you know, it's to try to express the somebody else's story through pictures.
Yeah.
It's fun though. It's just, it's bizarre.
Does it take like a different part of your brain?
Yeah, it's kind of nice. And in some ways it kind of takes a lot of the, So my phone's ringing here. Let me turn this thing off. It takes a lot of the hell was I saying? Yeah, it's definitely, because I think the last Vertigo job I did was just like a drawing a 6-page story or something. And it was really fun. I could draw with listening to, I could draw listening to audiobooks or something, where it's like if I draw listening to audiobooks when I'm having to write, it'll just screw me up.
Yeah.
Right. So. Did you have the choice of which artist you were working with on Prophet, or was that arranged for you?
Oh, yeah. It was total freedom, and I just hired, I just got friends of mine on it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Another cool thing about Prophet that is always, I was supposed to talk to about you guys with the process. It's horrible. But another thing with Prophet was that we got this cool thing where the backups, they're letting me run short stories by different artists I like a lot. And I feel like there's so much kind of – there's so many amazing creators that kind of you aren't seeing on comic book shelves right now. And I managed to get a couple of my favorite old artists that I grew up on to do work in the back, doing just 5-page short stories. And I've got Phil Barlow, who did this comic book called Zooniverse I'm obsessed with. It came out in the 80s. And like he worked on like the Elf cartoon. And you ever see Captain N?
Like, no,
I remember it. Yeah,
it was before your time, but he worked like the real Ghostbusters cartoon and that stuff.
Okay,
so he did all the character designs for that stuff, and he does great comics. I've got him doing a backup, and Frank Turan, who did some great Warren Ellis issues of Hellblazer, is doing one, and then a bunch of younger cartoonists, and so it's. Like you get the whole self-contained issue with the 5-page backup story into. I need to get out of the pitch mode here. I'm like selling it to you. And
No. I mean, that's really great that Image is all about that. I know that Curtis is having an idea because it seems like Image is a great place to bring new talent in it, and it would be cool to have instead of 5-page ads to have 5-page short stories from people who are also having trouble getting in and whatnot. It's good exposure.
Yeah, and ads are one of those things that like they actually stop me from buying comic books if there's too much into them.
Yeah, like especially when they cut in the middle of a scene or something. Like, it's mostly with just Marvel and DC, but it's very distracting. It's just like,
Yeah, I wonder if that's almost done to sell the trades more. It's like, oh, people buy the trades to not. I mean, they probably don't think about it that way, but. But it certainly makes me want to wait for the trades, and I'm somebody who prefers buying issues,
Interesting. I never thought of it that way, actually.
I know there's a lot of creators, especially with Image now, because, we're coming into this quandary for a lot of series where we can't get to the trades if we can't carry through the singles. And some people are looking at ways of how do you entice people to buy the singles and then, also like maybe come back for the trade. And I know there's a lot of conversation going about that. And that's one of the things that I consider from my upcoming project that Jeremy had mentioned is just getting for the singles, just have like extra content that, wouldn't be in the trade. You'd get other stuff for that, but have it exclusively in the singles to encourage that. And it's just kind of rocking the hard place that a lot of independent creators are facing right now. And the industry's changing so much with digital and it's just it's a different landscape than it was a few years ago.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I mean, I'm glad that things are kind of in this flux right now, but it definitely it's interesting and difficult at the same time,
Yeah, exactly.
I really enjoy. There's something really enjoyable for me about knowing a series is coming out and getting the issues and waiting for it every month. But
yeah.
But yeah, there's the downside if it's not that exciting or not really, and somebody doesn't kind of put enough in each issue to kind of entertain you. Like there's been a couple series where I was really excited to buy them, and then you get two issues, and you're like, this wasn't. I could, for me, whenever I go to the comic store, it's like the new comic books are always competing next to the dollar bin, and if I can get better comics out of the dollar bin,
right?
It's hard to spend $3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Jeremy, do you have any more questions for Brandon, or do you want to wrap up the show?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay. Well, I guess I can close this out here since you brought us in with the opener. Brandon, thanks so much for coming on and talking about all your various projects. We really appreciate you taking the time and chatting about Prophet and King City and all the other things you got coming up. So much appreciated.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys letting me kind of rant about my nonsense on here.
It's all good. I've enjoyed it because it's been, all of our special guests have been very different, and this one has been all over the place. So that's kept me on my toes. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks, man. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. We will, of course, be doing lots more Sensation Spectaculars. And if you ever want a guest that you'd like us to talk to and see if we can get in touch with, drop us a line on the Facebook fan page or on Twitter, and we'll definitely get back to you, and we'll see if we can get that person on there. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of the show, and we'll be talking to you very soon. Shape free.